champion. I won't say that I've done a good thing by keeping the maids, but I'll send them off if the time comes.
Narime couldn't believe what she heard. This was the same Duke Tereus who had taken her in after she lost her home? Whose family had forged relations with her tribe, despite the horrendous attitude that the Kurai Peninsula showed toward foreigners?
You've given up? She asked. Hardly. But like I said, we make contingency plans. One of those is planning for the Empire's victory. I've never been wedded to the idea of beastkin slavery.
Tereus shrugged.
If change comes, then it comes. And it's not as though the Empire seems to be trying to conquer the entire Federation. That's what makes stopping them so hard.
Nathan wants Tanias. He always has, Narime said.
The two of them seem rather obsessed with each other, Tereus pointed out.
Narime considered that point. Maybe. They're both ambitious men. But the difference is in what they're trying to do, and in what they can do. Tanias is an old politician. Everything he accomplishes is through scheming and politics. But Nathan is a leader. Your champion was genuinely excited by the idea that he was invading. Do you think anybody has ever felt that way about Tanias?
Maybe a few people, a long time ago, Tereus said cryptically as he stared at the wall. But not at the scale of an entire race across an entire nation. I get your point. Nathan's inspiring. Even if he is a puppet master, the results are different.
I don't believe he's a puppet master, Narime said. Tereus remained silent for a while. Eventually, he said,
Without the beastkin, we're still trying to make plans. But the Empire will act first. Theus is flailing around like an idiot. He's wide open. A smart man would seize his binding stones up north first, then use that opening to cut through the Federation and take Tartus. If Nathan moves fast enough,
he can take out Tanias before the Regency Council can act. Narime gave a wry smile. Or that's the excuse, anyway. I don't believe that the regents are really so slow that they can't defend the heartland of the Federation.
Tereus snorted. Of course not. But Tanias has spent so long using us as tools. For once, he'll stand on his own. His survival will be dependent on his own abilities.
Assuming, of course, that Narime stayed put. She knew where Nathan was likely to strike first. It would be trivial for her to be there when he attacked. Maybe she should put him to the test. If he wasn't capable of defeating her, was he really worthy of toppling the Federation? Or was Narime making excuses to go see Nathan again? In the end, she decided it didn't matter. She was old enough to decide for herself what she wanted to do. Maybe, for once, she would do something for her own sake, instead of for others.
Chapter 29. Nathan found himself with arms full of Lapcat. She rubbed against his chest and purred, her bushy black tail rubbing against his chin as it swished back and forth.
You have taken your medication, haven't you? Nathan asked.
Faye glared up at him, ears flat against her head. Her green eyes met his for a moment before she pressed her head into the crook of his neck.
I'm allowed to cuddle you, she said. You've been so busy lately.
There is a war on.
You made more time for me before, Faye whined. Most of my time with you over winter has been in bed. How long has it been since I had you all to myself?
A sudden sense of déjà vu assaulted Nathan. His arms closed around Faye instinctively, and he held her against him. She squeaked, then let out a purr. When he didn't release her after a while, her purring stopped. Her eyes peeked up at him.
Nathan? She asked.
It's fine, he said. I'm just doing something I regret not doing before.
It had been over a year, but the memories were still fresh. That feeling of reaching out and finding nobody with his senses. His home in ruins. Seeing the unmoving bodies of some of his oldest friends and loved ones. Death was a constant companion of Bastion's and Champion's. Nathan brushed with it when he fought the twins. Now he planned to invade the Federation. Maybe spending some quality time with Faye wasn't a bad idea. Faye murmured something that Nathan missed. He had a feeling it was important. After the coming battle, he'd make more time for her. Things had gotten bad if Faye was actively complaining that he wasn't paying enough attention to her. The two of them sat on a balcony that overlooked the Forzel Valley. This fortress belonged to Leopold and protected the northeastern border of the Anfang Empire. Countless plants and overgrown ivy crept over stonework around them. The Forzel Valley was a gap in the Garrick Mountains and contained one of the largest rivers on Domar. To the north were the Aurelian Spires, which were built into the northern half of the Garrick Mountains. West of the spires was Trefome, as well as countless border forts that belonged to the Empire. To the east of the spires was the Republic of Arcadia. But the most important border at Forzel Valley was the one with the Federation. Nathan overlooked it at this very moment from his position on the balcony. A small tributary river ran from the southern half of the Garrick Mountains to the Forzel River. This river formed the border between the Federation and the Empire. When the Federation attempted to invade the Empire over summer, their army had been detected by detection spells laid beneath the river. Now the situation was reversed. Nathan gathered his forces here and at Fort Tobram in preparation for a decapitation strike against the heart of the Federation. A creaking noise indicated visitors. Nathan glanced over his shoulder to see Anna and Seraph walking through the rusting iron gate that led to the balcony.
"We're not interrupting, are we?"
Anna asked, a flush rising on her face. She had heard about Faye's rutting.
"We're cuddling," Faye said. "I'm allowed to do that."
Anna shot Nathan a questioning look. He shrugged in response.
"Somebody has spent too little time with his pets," Seraph said, while striding over to the balcony railing. "You'll build a reputation like Fierce if all you do is bed your champions, Nathan."
"Last I checked, I'm not bedding you," Nathan said.
"Wait, you're not?" Anna asked. "Surprised?" Seraph asked. "Very."
Anna didn't elaborate on why she seemed to think Nathan was sleeping with Seraph. Instead, she took a seat next to Nathan.
"I spoke with Milgar again. He's satisfied with your plan. More than satisfied, so long as you can pull it off. The war with Trefome has already turned messy again, and he can't spare any bastions or champions."
The past 2 weeks had been a blur for Nathan. Following the surprise offer from the Dark Elves and his conversation with Ifrit, Nathan had been forced to make a sudden decision about whether to go on the offensive against the Federation. Some long discussions with Alice and Anna had resulted. Alice had even extended the time it took her to return to Alaik, so she had more time to talk to Nathan before she was surrounded by courtiers and guards in the palace. Supposedly, Charlotte had been upset.
"That's fortunate," Nathan said, "even if it wouldn't have mattered."
"I'm glad you feel that you can dismiss one of the most powerful people in the Empire," Anna said. "Please teach me your secrets of ascension so that I can also ignore him."
"That's not what I mean. The Dark Elf offer is the best choice we have," Nathan said, feeling that he was trapped in some sort of time loop. How many times had he said this over the past 2 weeks? Not enough, apparently. Anna looked at him skeptically. "If the Regency Council ousts Tanius, then the Federation destabilizes," Nathan explained for the umpteenth time. "Even if they don't, their decision-making ability will suffer. They'll be vulnerable to demonic invasion, rebellion, civil war, or foreign invasion. If the Dark Elves want Tanius's head, then they may even take it themselves. and the fairies may even use the Federation's territory as a way to appease the elves.
You keep mentioning that. What is wrong with Arcadia? Seraph asked. I've only cut bits and pieces.
Nathan sighed. It's complicated, and I don't care to explain in detail again. Short version, only elves and fairies have voting rights in their democracy, but a lot of bureaucratic positions are controlled based on magical power, and fairies are inherently stronger than elves. Ergo, fairies control the nation, even though elves have the vast majority of the votes. And that's not even mentioning the huge beastkin population in the far north that nobody sees.
Why do you even know this? Anna asked.
Because it had been important to the preventing the destruction of the world at one point, and a lot of beastkin had fled from Arcadia in the aftermath of its civil war. But Nathan couldn't exactly explain what happened in his timeline, so he shrugged and said, It helps to know how other nations are run sometimes. The other women gave him a skeptical look, even Faye. After Leopold had revealed that he had suspected Nathan of hiding things all along, the possibility of others knowing the truth had risen. Nathan wondered whether these three knew, or at least suspected, the truth, or something close to it. In any case, if the Federation collapses, it means that a large number of active demonic portals become unprotected, not to mention the Hakim Desert. Nathan fixed Anna with a glare. That is the crux of the Dark Elves' offer, and Sariv explicitly brought it up. We hand over Tanias to the Council of Aurelia. They provide the military and diplomatic support to ensure the Empire can occupy the entire Federation. No instability. Then the Empire takes over the demonic portals and the defense of the Hakim Desert.
And you're happy to go from supporting peace at all costs to the complete capture of a foreign nation? Anna asked.
No, I'm not. But life is about taking the least worst option. And right now, I have the chance to prevent the Federation from becoming a foothold for a demonic invasion of Domar. Given how close we've come in the last year to that, I'd be a pretty shitty bastion to refuse the offer, Nathan said.
Anna grimaced and looked away. Something soft tickled Nathan's chin, and he instinctively stroked Faye's ears. She giggled, nuzzling against his neck.
Well, at least she's able to enjoy the conversation, Seraph said wryly. For what it's worth, I agree.
You do? Anna asked.
I do.
Aren't you the one who compares Nathan to Tanias half the time? Anna pressed.
How nice to know that Seraph did that when he wasn't around.
I do. He's certainly proving my point lately. Spreading stories about Fae among the Beastkin populace in the Federation. Talking up the freedom of Beastkin in the Empire. Siding with the Dark Elves with a plan to conquer the Federation. There's ambition, and then there's rising to the top while crushing everything before you.
Seraph smirked, and her eyes turned to Nathan.
The look in those eyes was the opposite of what Nathan expected. There should have been judgment, fear, hatred, or at least some sense of wariness. Nathan had begun to take steps that he felt were beyond the pale. He knew that his younger self would despise what he had become. But this was what it took to stop problems before they occurred. Instead, Seraph's eyes glimmered with a mixture of respect and pride. What she was prideful of, Nathan didn't know.
I guess I'm just small-minded, Anna muttered. She looked away, hiding her expression from Nathan.
Seraph shrugged, then strode over to where everybody was sitting.
Before I leave you two to sort out your issues, I want to confirm our strategy, Seraph said.
There's nothing to sort out. Anna said, scowling at Seraph.
I think there is. Aren't you his countess?
Seraph smiled at the noblewoman. Anna turned away again.
Let's get this over with, Nathan said. Forgive me if I don't help with any visual aids. I'm a little preoccupied.
It's fine. Just don't start doing anything other than petting her hair or fur, Seraph teased.
I already said we're only cuddling, Fay pouted.
After gesturing for Seraph to move on, Nathan waited for her to brief him.
There are two binding stones between us and Tartus, both controlled by Fias. Plus the binding stone near Tartus itself, Seraph explained. I don't know who controls that one.
Why not? Shouldn't that be public knowledge?
It was, but the bastion in command died over fall, taken out by demons in the Hakim Desert. Tonius hasn't publicly announced his replacement, but you've said that the stone is still active, so...
Seraph shrugged.
He has an ace up his sleeve, or so he thinks.
Nathan frowned.
I can't help but think he's given it to Fias.
After his failures? Seraph scoffed.
Fias may be incompetent, but he's under Tonius's thumb. Now that Tonius is backed into a corner, who else can he rely on? Nathan asked.
The other bastions Nathan had fought against were currently in the Hakim Desert, according to Seraph. While it was possible that an entirely new bastion would emerge to surprise Nathan, he couldn't help but think that Tonius would rely on the one bastion he could reliably manipulate, even if Fias was so stupid that he had gotten himself killed early in Nathan's timeline.
Whatever the case, we only need to take two of the binding stones, Nathan said. The one in Forzel Valley and the one near Tartus.
Tartus lay in the center of the Federation, but that left it vulnerable to Nathan. Normally, it was shielded by bastion fortresses in the north and south, but the fortresses to the south belonged to regents who didn't support Tonius. Duke Tarius controlled the binding stone immediately south of Tartus, and King George the one south of Garrick Pass. If both of those regents didn't protect Tonius, then Nathan could take Tartus with minimal resistance. All he had to do was deal with the binding stones under Tonius's direct control, and one of those was far enough north of the city that it could be bypassed entirely.
I still think that's too risky. We could end up fighting two bastions at Tartus and reinforcements from the rest of the Federation, Seraph countered. Just because we can bypass a fortress doesn't mean we should.
Time spent taking another binding stone is time that may cost us everything. The other regents are more likely to intervene the longer we take to capture Tonius. While George has told us that he is willing to stand down if we only attack Tartus, he's not exactly a man of his word, Nathan said dryly.
You don't think he has a spine somewhere under all that flab of his? Anna said.
I don't think his behavior has anything to do with his weight, but if he thinks that we're going to lose against Tonius, he'll change his mind in an instant.
Nathan's lips thinned.
While I've pulled Leopold's champions forward to defend the border, I'd rather not rely on them. Open war with the Federation would be brutal.
That was the crux of Nathan's plan. This decapitation strike would end the war before it really began, and Leopold's champions wouldn't be involved. Leopold had given Nathan the authority to command the entire Imperial army on the eastern border. Nathan had confirmed this fact with Alice, who had acted as his relay with the Emperor and Archduke von Milgar. While it was risky to alert them to the fact that Leopold had passed on the power to him, Nathan knew that using it without the permission of the Emperor was stupid in the first place. But what would be stupider was using it at all if he didn't have to. As such, Leopold's champions and most of the Imperial Army held defensive positions along the border. The offensive would be undertaken by Anna's soldiers and Nathan's champions alone. Oh, and an exceptionally large sum of money had been mysteriously transferred to Anna by unknown sources. If one looked very closely, they might be able to trace it back to the Archduke. That money ensured that Anna's county remained solvent, despite the expenses involved in paying for such a huge military campaign.
Have you confirmed Fias's location? Nathan asked.
He recently traveled north to Tartus from Duke Tarius's territory, Seraph said. I lost track of him in the city.
What are the chances that he's cowering in the city, too scared to fight us?
high enough that several of Leopold's champions are trying to bait us into taking that bet, Seraph said.
That's rather mean of them, Faye said.
Given half of your knights are betting their year's wages that Nathan will crush Tanius without needing any help, I don't think you can complain about gambling, Seraph said.
Faye winced and hid her face in Nathan's chest. The gambling rings had become more about pride than making money at this point. Faye should have shut them down before they became this bad. If Nathan needed to call for reinforcements, he wanted to do so without worrying about his soldiers losing their shirts. He made a note to speak to May, who was the champion that Leopold had left in command of Forzel Valley.
Anything else? Nathan asked Seraph.
Sunstorms reported that the soldiers on the border are increasing, but none of them have made any moves to invade yet, Seraph said.
He grunted. We have to assume the best if we want to pull this off. That's why Leopold's champions are there. Have Vera, Sen, and Sunstorm prepare to march from Fort Tobram to Tartus as scheduled. With that, Seraph left the balcony. She dragged Faye out by the ear. The yowls of the cat girl echoed up the stairwell for a solid minute before the heavy door at the bottom of the stairwell slammed shut.
So, shall we talk about our issues? Nathan asked aloud.
Is that something you usually do? Anna responded.
It worked with Alice, surprisingly.
Ah, of course.
Anna's tone became acidic. A long pause.
I thought you liked Alice, Nathan asked.
I never said I didn't.
Anna's back remained turned. This conversation was going nowhere. Had she always been so pouty and childish?
No, Nathan realized, but he had been paying a lot more attention to Alice while she had been visiting. He spent enough time around women and had been in enough relationships to recognize jealousy when he saw it.
Is this a conversation we can have now, or should it wait until after the battle? Nathan asked. He kept his tone calm.
There wasn't anything to keep his hands busy, so he stood up and walked over to the railing. Leaning over it, he stared out at the lush field below him. Blades of newly grown spring grass blew in the wind. A wave formed across the valley as a gust whistled past. The Forzel Valley was highly arable, but much of it was uninhabited. Too much tension over borders. Towns and villages were few and far between.
Once you capture the Federation, what do you plan to do? Anna asked.
Nathan almost didn't hear her. He wondered if that was intentional, as if she wanted her question to remain unheard and this problem to remain unresolved.
Consolidate, Nathan said without hesitation. The topic had been on his mind for a while.
Consolidate? Consolidate what?
Everything, really. Champions, allies, resources, defenses, soldiers, political power.
He didn't want to do the last part, but Nathan was beginning to realize that it was necessary.
So you don't have a new destination in mind? You plan to stay here, even after everything?
Anna sounded almost relieved.
No, I do have one in mind, but it's not like I can go there instantly. It's like how you had to wait until you had a bastion before you began your reconstruction plan for Garrick County, Nathan said. If I get ahead of myself, I'll fall over at the next hurdle. Except I'm not running a race, so the consequences are a touch harsher. I've come too close to that over winter.
Really? Things seemed to go rather well for you, Anna said.
I was on a razor's edge half the time. If the negotiations hadn't split the regents, we'd be in a much worse position. The cascade and the early arrival of the messenger was nearly a disaster, as we were barely strong enough to hold off the twins. And now, he grimaced. The preparations for this offensive were rough, to say the least. He'd had weeks to prepare for a war that he should have been preparing for all winter. The Federation had been preparing for war. If the regents hadn't gotten cold feet and turned on Tanius, Nathan's plan would be the definition of insanity. He had too few champions, a hostile political faction opposing him in the Empire, and far fewer troops than necessary. But the stars had aligned, so to speak. Despite Ifrit's advice, Nathan couldn't help but think this felt too good to be true. He hadn't spoken to Kadria recently. He wasn't sure he wanted to. The idea that he might be playing into a predetermined event bothered him. In the end, Nathan resolved himself to trust Ifrit's wisdom. Doing anything else left him spinning in circles. Once Tanius was out of the picture, Nathan could stabilize himself. Then he could gain enough power to avoid another mess like this one. "Now we're in a war that I wanted to avoid," Nathan said, finishing his earlier thought. "I'm leaning on you to provide the soldiers, but we haven't had the time to recruit many. Even the Beastkin are wary, despite the pay."
"True, but that's why I'm here, aren't I? If you need me, I guess I'll have you to myself for a while then," Anna said, smiling.
It didn't reach her eyes. "I do have several champions."
"Maybe, but I'm your only countess. So long as you're the bastion of Garrick Pass, that will remain true, won't it?"
Anna stood up and turned toward the exit. At this angle, he couldn't see her face. As Anna left the balcony, Nathan stared at the creaking iron gate she left open. Eventually, he followed her downstairs. He had a war to win. It was important to tackle life one problem at a time. He'd confront Anna about this later. Whatever she might be worrying about, Nathan still needed somebody to help him handle the day-to-day administration. He wasn't about to let somebody like Anna slip from his fingers due to a little jealousy and confusion. Chapter 30.
"They say that a bastion's fortress tells you a lot about them," Seraph said.
"Really?" Faye asked, tilting her head. "What does Nathan say about him?"
Nathan glared at Seraph. She winked back at him. They were encamped on the Federation side of Forzel Valley, staring up at the fortress that belonged to Fias. It was known as Castle Forselberg, although the original castle had been destroyed in a demonic invasion nearly 200 years ago. The sun set in the distance, shading them in its crimson rays. Thousands of soldiers dug defensive ditches, cooked meals, erected tents, and patrolled the perimeter of the encampment. Battle mages formed ritual circles to block communications in and out of the enemy fortress. The journey here had been uneventful. Fias hadn't even harassed them with his champions. The border forts had been abandoned, although there were signs of recent occupation. Nathan's scouts had followed the tracks of retreating Federation soldiers for the past several days. The tracks didn't stop at Forselberg, where the Binding Stone was. Some of the scouts had continued to pursue the Federation farther, but many had stopped. The fact that most of the enemy soldiers were retreating from the frontier was enough for Nathan. He did wonder who was defending Castle Forselberg. Surely Fias and Tanius weren't surrendering a frontier fortress and Binding Stone.
"Nathan's the sort with a dozen contingency plans, countless traps, and who overthinks everything," Seraph said. "Garrick Pass is very Nathan in that respect. Multi-layered walls, deceptively simple traps, postern gates for secret attacks mid-battle, lots of siege weapons. The place is a maze as well, in both the keep and the fortress. I'm half expecting Nathan to reveal he has a secret tunnel from the basement to outside the walls at some point."
"That would be a structural weakness," Nathan countered, feeling offended at the suggestion he would do something so stupid. "A sorcerer could find it using magic and invade the keep. Any tunnel would weaken the protective barriers around the keep."
"But they'd be cool," Faye said.
"I'll keep that in mind," Nathan said. Anna laughed.
"You don't sound convinced."
"Cool doesn't win battles."
"No wonder you're so functionally minded," Seraph said. "Most of your methods are quite old, but they're well-founded. Most bastions prefer flashier things. You use far fewer barriers than most, for instance, as you can see from Forselberg."
Seraph nodded her head at the fortress in front of them.
Although the original Castle Forselberg lay in ruins, the modern one was a very intimidating-looking piece of work. A 10-story keep loomed across the skyline. It had a tower at every corner and gleamed in the sunlight. The entire structure appeared to be formed from pure white marble, which somehow maintained a pristine appearance. 3 concentric layers of walls surrounded the keep, and each layer grew taller the closer it was to the keep. Like the keep, they appeared to be formed from marble, but lacked the same pristine gleam. None of the walls had any towers on them, but they were extraordinarily thick. Mangonels, ballistae, and other siege engines lined the tops of the walls. Hundreds of soldiers bustled along the walkways, many carrying torches. The battlements were lined with white lights, but they must not be bright enough if the soldiers needed their own light sources. Solid walls of transparent light hovered in front of each wall. Nathan estimated that there was a gap of 20 meters between the barrier and the wall itself. Unlike the barriers used in the Empire and Nathan's own castle, these barriers were flat rather than domes. It was unclear how high in the sky they rose, and, for that matter, how deep they went. "Barriers are less reliable than they appear to be," Nathan said. "A lot of people discovered that when the cascade happened."
Anna winced. "That's a mess I still need to deal with when I return. A lot of people panicked when they learned that Trontia's barrier didn't work during the cascade. If it could be disrupted, would it protect the town as well as we thought it would?"
"No," Nathan said flatly. She winced again. Faye tilted her head, her eyes narrowed.
"When we first saw Trontia's barrier, you didn't like it, that they hadn't been tested yet."
"I also said they weren't economical to build many of. But yes, the technology behind them isn't complete," Nathan said. "The barriers used by bastions are different, but the magical concepts are similar, and they aren't as strong as they appear."
"I suppose you're already thinking of a way in," Seraph said.
"Aren't you in command?" Nathan said. "And you haven't told me what Phaeus's fortress says about him."
"Ha! I want to hear this," Anna said with a grin.
Seraph rolled her eyes.
"He built a gigantic fortress out of marble and invested magic to ensure that the keep is always shining. It's basically a gigantic dick for him to wave at everyone who walks past. But, like everything with Phaeus, it only looks good. There's no technique behind the excessively pretty and intimidating idiot."
"I guess it's a good thing you know how to use yours," Faye said, patting Nathan's shoulder. "Especially now that it's bigger."
Anna and Seraph stared at Nathan. He coughed.
"Ignore that," Nathan said.
"Did you have to say that?" Anna asked Faye.
"Say what?" the cat girl said, innocently tilting her head and opening her eyes as wide as possible.
"Don't play coy with me. Why would you even bring up Nathan's—"
Anna trailed off, her eyes turning toward Nathan's crotch.
"Nation conqueror?" Seraph suggested.
"Please don't give my penis stupid names," Nathan said, "especially when you haven't seen it."
"I've definitely seen it," Seraph said, "although I apparently haven't seen the new and improved Champion Maker. You have sex in your office far too much for me not to have seen it."
"He does?" Anna asked.
"I can't believe you haven't walked in on him teaching his champions a lesson with his catgirl tamer," Seraph said.
"We toned it down over winter," Nathan said, ignoring Seraph's attempts to annoy him.
"No, you toned it down in the last month," Seraph corrected.
Anna glared at Nathan.
"Unfortunately," Faye muttered, "and you still owe me a really long session after this. This medication sucks."
Anna and Seraph stared at the cat girl, who stuck her tongue out at them.
"Can we change the topic now?" Nathan requested. "And Faye, stop being a tease. Or whatever you're being."
"Okay," Faye said, her eyes gleaming and a cheeky smile stretching across her lips.
The other women glared at her.
"So Phaeus's fortress looks impressive, but it has a lot of weak points," Anna said,
resuming the earlier topic.
Is that why you still went ahead with the assault, even though Faye's sapphire didn't arrive in time?
Nathan grimaced. That remained a sore point. He had requested additional gems for both Faye and Sunstorm before winter, but neither had arrived. At the moment, he had 2 mono-gem champions and a duo-gem champion. He also had an honorary champion in Sen. She was currently closer in power to a duo-gem champion, but was vulnerable to anti-sorcery mono-gem champions such as Faye. To add to his strength, he had Vera as an ally. She was a highly capable sorceress, but struggled to match mono-gem champions. And while Anna lent Nathan a large enough army to invade the Federation with, ordinary soldiers meant very little when battling other bastions. Soldiers were there to occupy forts, keep other soldiers busy, protect supply lines, and intimidate enemy armies into running away. The last part was especially important, because the average person failed to comprehend the enormous power gap between bastions and ordinary people. If somebody was part of a 1,000-strong army and they were fighting 2 women with fancy gems, they probably thought they were in for a good time. In truth, they'd be lucky to go home with all their limbs. Hence why a large army remained useful. It saved time and avoided unnecessary casualties. Nathan wasn't invading the Federation because he felt they were an awful nation that needed to stop existing. He was invading it because he needed to remove its leader. Every person who died as a result was a weight on Nathan's shoulders that he preferred not to think about. Every soldier had a family. Fathers, brothers, daughters, mothers, wives, husbands. Then again, so did all the people in the Empire. If Nathan refused to act, people would die. He was a bastion because he would act and bear the consequences. A little over a year ago, he would have said that he needed to act because of his oath to the Watcher Omria. He was less sure of that now. Regardless, soldiers were useful, and many of those within the Federation would eventually help Nathan against demons in the future. But what Nathan really needed were more champions, and stronger champions. That's why he had wanted to promote Faye to a duo-gem champion before this campaign. The fact that her sapphire didn't arrive was troubling. It was another sign that all was not well within the Imperial Army. If even Leopold couldn't secure a second sapphire for Nathan during winter, what did that mean for the Emperor's political fortunes? Nathan needed to focus on his own supply of gemstones for his champions after this. Maybe his alliance with the Dark Elves had a secondary benefit. Although a second gem would have been preferable, this fortress is terribly designed, Nathan explained, returning to the topic at hand. There's a good chance that the barriers aren't strong enough to block Faye's gem ability. Her flames consume magic, and Fias has spread his barriers across 4 separate structures. He then pointed at the ground. Even worse, I don't know if Fias is smart enough to think of tunneling. Do you know why the Empire uses domes for their barriers?
I do now, Anna said dryly, grimacing. I'm guessing the barrier is a complete sphere.
Exactly, Nathan nodded. Straight barriers can only go down so far. 4 barriers mean 4 times the power drain on the binding stone. Fias is already wasting power on his shining keep. He's likely skimping elsewhere. If Faye can't burn the barrier, Seraph can probably dig under them.
You're joking, right? You're going to use me as a glorified tunneler?
Seraph crossed her arms and huffed. Remind me again whose gem ability vaporizes non-living material. You can turn the walls into dust, or dig an entire tunnel in the time it would take for a team of skilled miners to break ground.
It's good to know how I factor into your plans, Seraph said.
If you didn't want to be the linchpin of good plans, then you should have gotten amethysts like all the champions who aren't useful outside of combat, Nathan said. Faye's eyes widened at Nathan's words, and she suddenly clutched her fingers over the sapphire within her collarbone. She stared at Nathan in terror when he looked at her. Several moments passed before Nathan realized what she was panicking about. I'm not saying that amethysts are bad, Nathan said, but they're a combat gem. You didn't see Nerevia in action, but she's an extremely dangerous champion due to her amethysts. Her skill as a weapon master is greatly enhanced by her gems, even if they don't give her any fancy gem abilities.
Vera mentioned that she was gunning down demons in droves with her repeater crossbows, Anna said, nodding in agreement. The bolts had so much power behind them that they blew off heads.
Sounds about right, Nathan said.
Eh? Amethysts can do that? Faye asked. But she's firing a crossbow?
The magic of the gem applies to her weapons, Nathan explained. If all an amethyst did was make a champion extremely strong, they'd be useless. Instead, they grant all manner of interesting passive enhancements.
Nathan began to take off his fingers.
Common boons are the ability to cut through any material, having raw strength great enough to leap up cliffs and crush steel like it's made of paper, magically enhanced swings that can cut down an entire company of soldiers or even a city wall. In Nerevia's case, all of her weapons have their impact enhanced. Her daggers punch through magically reinforced steel. Her crossbow bolts pop heads. And you don't want to see what she does with a sledgehammer.
A few of Nathan's implanted memories involved Nerevia using a sledgehammer for executions. A single downward hammer blow to their head left little behind of her victim besides a visceral image for onlookers. That image, and what little was left of the body, ensured people knew the price of disobeying Bastian Tarben von Straub.
"I'll take your word for it, given the look on your face," Seraph said, grimacing. "But yes, Fay, amethysts are the most popular gem for champions in the Empire and its former territories, for good reason. They are extremely effective. Boring, but effective. Underestimate their users at your own peril."
"Every champion is dangerous if they know how to use their gems," Nathan said. "But every gem has weaknesses, and the true quality of a champion comes in knowing how to work around them. Although that's also why I'm here."
"More to the point, what happens after we get through the barriers?" Anna asked, reminding them of why they were here to begin with.
"That depends on what's waiting for us. Whether we tunnel beneath the walls or use a combination of Fae's flames and Seraph's energy waves, the next step is overwhelming the defenders," Nathan said. "Fius will probably deploy his champions to stop us from getting too far once he realizes his defenses are as useful as butter."
"Won't it be too expensive to melt all the barriers? And while my gem ability is cheap, digging a tunnel will mean using it a lot," Seraph said.
Nathan smirked. Then he pointed at the walls. After a few moments, the women looked at him in confusion. They didn't know what he meant.
"The walls have another problem," Nathan said.
"Maybe, but they still have barriers," Seraph said.
"If Fius is skimping on the barriers at all, I guarantee you that he's using projectile barriers more than a few meters above ground," Nathan said.
"I don't know what that is," Anna said.
"There are two types of barrier, projectile and physical. Projectile barriers only stop magic and fast-moving objects. They're intended to stop volleys of arrows and catapults, hence the name," Nathan said. "I use these at Garrick Pass, and they're in much wider use in fortresses as they're far cheaper to sustain."
Anna frowned. "I'm guessing a physical barrier is the type at Trontia. It stops everything from passing through it while it's active. Nothing and no one gets in or out."
"Yes,"
Nathan grimaced.
"They're expensive to build and maintain. They're also highly vulnerable to disruption due to their reliance on large volumes of ambient magic from the ley lines. They're also painful to use in fortresses because they restrict your ability to sortie. If you want to slip out to launch an offensive, you have to drop the barrier. But then your enemy knows you're attacking and can also bombard your fortress."
Shaking his head, Nathan recalled a few foolish attempts in the past to launch counterattacks against demons from castles protected by physical barriers. They rarely worked and were often very costly raids. Seraph's eyes widened.
"You think he's using a combination of physical and projectile barriers?"
"That's what I said, yes," Nathan drawled.
"I want to say that Fierce is smarter than I thought, but I doubt he thought of that idea," Seraph muttered. It's almost genius. Barriers are hard to see close to the ground. If you hit a physical barrier, you'll assume it's physical the entire way up. I'd never think to try to go through it.
But that's what we're going to do. Once we're through the first barrier, we get on top of the wall and jump between them. They're too close together for concentric layers of walls. It's an easy jump for champions. Once we're in, we can go for the binding stone before Fias knows what's happening, Nathan said.
The same damn plan, Seraph muttered. You're a bastard, you know that?
She laughed.
Goddess, if this works, why do you even think they're different barrier types? Can you sense something?
Then Seraph's eyes narrowed.
Or do you know something else?
He didn't, actually, but the question from Seraph bothered him. Fias is using flat barriers. It's a very odd choice in general. In my experience, that usually means somebody is up to something. Nathan gave her a wry smile. You said it for yourself. Bastions like flashier things. When a bastion starts using something as outdated as flat barriers, it raises suspicion. Nathan had been taught the technique by Gareth in the past. It helped to conserve power from the binding stone while rapidly building defenses in a demonic portal. Demons approached walls in the portal head-on, and they couldn't tunnel underground without risking certain death. If he'd had another week to spare the excess power from the binding stone, Nathan would have used that method. It bothered him that Fias was using it here. Somebody much smarter than Fias had designed this fortress, but they'd tried to cover that fact up with the gigantic, gleaming keep. It had worked on Seraph, and almost worked on Nathan.
So, is this castle badly built or well built? Fay asked.
Both, Anna said, which is concerning.
Seraph gave Nathan a curious look, although she remained smiling the entire time. You've heard my plan. It's time we get some rest and prepare to attack tomorrow, Nathan said. We don't have time to waste on a prolonged siege. After all, he had to capture Tanius as soon as possible. But he remained disconcerted about how easily the Federation had surrendered its territory to him. Chapter 31
Dawn came, and Nathan began his assault. He mounted his attack from the eastern side of the fortress, ensuring that the sun was behind him. Castle Forselberg sat on relatively flat land, so although Nathan had marched from the west, he was able to encircle the entire castle and begin his attack from whatever direction he wanted. That was the advantage of being the aggressor. The plan went off without a hitch, at least at first. Soldiers pushed wooden mantlets forward. These were large wooden shields on wheels, and their purpose was to protect the infantry from arrows and boulders. Behind them came the primary force of heavy infantry. They wore heavy armor and carried shields. Most of them were beastkin, and their tails hung low as they sheltered from the rain of projectiles from the wall. In response, catapults and battle mages flung spells at the walls. These crashed uselessly on the barrier, however. Even concerted efforts to crack the barrier proved ineffective. The binding stone was far too powerful to be overwhelmed by conventional means. Fortunately, Fae's flames were unconventional enough to work. She rushed up to the barrier ahead of the advancing infantry. Seraph kept up with her, blasting energy waves overhead to keep Fae from being turned into a pincushion or flattened by a boulder. It didn't take much imagination to picture Seraph cursing at Fae as the catgirl sprinted ahead without a care in the world. A huge flare of azure flames burst forth from the base of the translucent barrier of light. Nathan shielded his eyes, blinking away stars. His eyes were enhanced with magic, and that meant the sudden surge of bright light had hurt. A lot. When he recovered his vision, he saw the barrier burning. The flames clung to the field of light. They crept along it, eating away at the magic that formed it, and growing larger with each passing second. Within a minute, the blue flames opened a hole taller than the wall.
5 minutes later, the entire eastern side of the barrier was ablaze. Blue embers drifted through the air. Individual flames licked the sky, stretching dozens of meters in length as the barrier pumped more and more magic into itself in a desperate attempt to plug the hole. The ring of azure destruction grew with each second. Beneath it, the cries of the terrified defenders grew in volume. Nathan stared in amazement at the destruction that Fay wrought. An entire barrier had been torn apart in minutes, and he wasn't sure if it was stopping. Had he ever seen a monogem ability capable of consuming magic at this rate? He made a note to research Fay's gem ability more when he returned to Garrick Pass. If it was as dangerous as he suspected, he might need to make changes to the way he constructed his barriers. Surely there must be a way to build barriers so that they didn't fuel Fay's ability. The barrier was literally destroying itself as it fed more energy into an ability that grew in strength by consuming magic. The speed of the barrier's destruction began to push the defenders over the edge. Panic was visible on the battlements. Federation soldiers pointed at one another, screaming and shouting. Officers waved swords and banners in the air as they attempted to maintain order. Then a section of the wall collapsed. It began as a rumbling, then a great crack rung out across the clearing. A portion of wall, roughly 10 meters wide, began to fall in on itself. The series of booms that rung out as stone after stone crashed into one another must have been deafening to those in the fortress. The walls were close together, and sound would echo relentlessly. Dozens of soldiers fell to their deaths, and Nathan shut out their screams. A brief silence fell in the aftermath of the wall's collapse. A few more stones tumbled down from the ends of the wall that had been blown apart. Seraph's gem ability had worked without issue. Somebody screamed on the walls. Then several more people did. Within seconds, a full-blown rout erupted. Hundreds of defenders fled the walls. Behind them, the soldiers within the inner layers stared in horror. They had watched the collapse of one-third of the fortress within a handful of minutes. At this point, Nathan wasn't even sure he needed to use his plan to jump over the walls. He had thought that Fay would need to pump a huge amount of flame into the barrier to take it out. Each time she did so, he had planned to top up her gem. Given he was fairly distant from Fort Tobram, topping up Fay was fairly expensive. The farther a bastion was from a binding stone, the more difficult it was to draw on its power. Right now, Nathan needed to rely more on his champions and save as much of his binding stone's power for any duels with Fias or a dangerous duo gem champion. "I take it you can still use your gem ability," Nathan said when he caught up to Fay.
"Yep," she chirped. "I still had to use a fair bit of fire, but way less than you thought. It's finally stopped now, but wow, it took out so much of the barrier. It's still only halfway back."
Her flames had consumed over half of the barrier around the fortress. The damage wasn't permanent. Given that, Nathan figured to improvise and use her fire again. No enemy champions were in sight. In fact, there weren't any enemies in sight.
"Wait," Nathan said.
He frowned.
"How did they escape if there's a physical barrier in place?"
"They lowered it?" Fay suggested.
"I would have felt it. A barrier going up or down involves a lot of magical power."
Seraph looked at him, about to say something. She smirked.
"There's a secret tunnel somewhere, I'm betting. I don't remember it coming up, but I didn't spend much time here."
That meant Nathan needed to search for it. Probing for physical irregularities wasn't his specialty, unfortunately. He had always relied on his binding stone to inform him about the space nearby. Although the binding stone was becoming less reliable, Kadria could deceive it. Who else could? The thought of Kadria gave him an idea. Rather than using an earth element spell to comb the surrounding area, why not use a spatial one? Nathan had only dabbled in ascended magic before, but it was becoming increasingly commonplace around him. spatial manipulation, mental magic, control over the physical forces of reality, direct channeling of magical energy. All of these were the domain of ascended magic. Sunstorm's gem abilities were a form of spatial manipulation, as she affected the ability of people to see the space she was in, or teleported herself through shifting her position directly. The darkness she summoned wasn't darkness, but a side effect of all light ceasing to exist upon contact with her gem ability. Similarly, mystic foxes made extensive use of ascended magic. So far as Nathan knew, foxes couldn't even use the natural elements. They tricked others into thinking that they could. For Nathan, he had only known a few tricks. Most of his ascended magic relied heavily upon the binding stone. He could use spatial magic when building parts of his fortresses. Since arriving here, he had been greatly enhancing his ascended magic wards. But when he attacked the twins in a fit of rage, he had used unvarnished mental magic. The only time he normally used ascended magic directly was when he used counter magic. Back when he fought Sunstorm last year, he had countered her gem ability by directly manipulating the darkness she summoned. That darkness was an area of spatial manipulation, so he had simply taken control of it by infusing his own counter spell with ascended magic from the binding stone. When he had crushed the distorted area of space summoned by Sunstorm, the side effect of condensing the space she had summoned had created an explosion. He thought about that area of space she summoned, the way it had felt. If he could cast a spell using spatial magic, he might be able to locate the escape tunnel, even if it was protected by magical wards that hampered detection spells. It took a few goes. At first, he tried third-rank spells, but the spell frames burned out the moment they turned golden. Then he upgraded to a fourth-rank spell and felt something might work. With more time, he could probably get away with a supercharged fourth-rank spell, but he didn't know how to make it work properly. A fifth-rank spell was expensive, particularly as he was using power from the binding stone. But every failure with a fourth-rank spell cost him power as well. The first time he cast the spell, it worked. He envisioned the idea of a space that stretched beneath him and across the outer ring of the wall. It didn't need to be too big, as the enemy soldiers had fled quickly. The escape tunnel needed to be nearby. Within this space that he had created, he knew the feeling of every speck of dirt. That was too much information for him to handle, so he mentally pulled back on what he was receiving from his spell. Pretty quickly, he knew the makeup of everything below him within several hundred meters. The composition of the earth, the countless colonies of ants within it, how far down the barrier went, and, of course, the location of the escape tunnel. He nearly finished the spell before realizing that maintaining the spell was less effort than casting it. Keeping it active practically debilitated him, however. The sheer amount of information being pumped into his mind bordered on overwhelming. He didn't need to know how many ants there were nearby, but he knew it anyway. His attempts to cut off the information flow failed, and he realized that he would need to refine this spell a lot more before it was useful in more situations. "I've found the escape tunnel," Nathan said. "The bad news is that I'm going to need you to do all the work until we're near the keep. I don't know if I can cast this again, but I can keep it active." Nobody answered. He looked around and saw Seraph gawking at him. And because Seraph was shocked, Faye put on the same expression. "Is something wrong?" Nathan asked.
"That was ascended magic," Seraph whispered.
Oh, so she recognized that.
"Yes," Nathan said.
"That explains a lot," she said.
She gulped, closed her eyes, then reopened them.
"I'd suspected as much after what Sunstorm told me about your initial encounter with her. But seeing it with my own eyes is something else. I didn't even know that humans could use it."
"I am a bastion," Nathan shrugged.
Seraph gave him a cutting look, but dropped the topic.
I don't get it," Faye said.
"I'll explain it to you later," Nathan said.
He ruffled her hair. It felt weird when combined with all the other information being pumped into his head. Capturing the next three layers of wall went terrifyingly smoothly. Nathan eventually dropped the spell once he found the tunnel beneath the third layer of walls and let out a sigh of relief. He needed a lot more time to practice that spell before he used it again. His soldiers rounded up the Federation defenders outside the keep. One last glowing barrier kept them out, but this one was a proper dome. Fias hadn't skimped on protection for the keep, and there was no indication of an escape tunnel here. Nobody had fled inside of it.
Fay,
Nathan said, gesturing for her to get to work. Once more, a barrier blazed brilliantly in the morning light. Inside the keep, the Federation soldiers didn't bother to fight back. They threw down their weapons and surrendered. Nathan left his soldiers behind to handle the busy work. He had a binding stone to claim. He actively focused on his magical senses, just in case somebody planned to ambush him. No champions attacked him. There was no sign of Fias. Had the Federation surrendered the frontier? Had somebody betrayed Tanius? Or was Fias merely a coward who had run away from a proper fight? Nathan entered the chamber that contained the binding stone and received his answer. Upon entering, he paused and signaled for Seraph and Fay to stop. They gave him an odd look. Nobody was here, but he knew she was. If he used spatial magic, he wondered if he was good enough to sense her. As it was, he felt the tiniest blank spot in his magical senses. He had many years of familiarity of a certain woman using her spatial magic to sneak up on him or hide in his bed.
Narime, show yourself, Nathan said.
He placed his hand on his sword hilt. Seraph cursed, raising her tonfas. Fay looked confused, but wreathed her sword in flame. Both looked around, wary of sudden attacks.
That is the second time you've seen through my magic,
Narime's voice said.
I believe the saying is that once is luck and twice is coincidence. But I'm inclined to say that you're relying on something else here.
Narime blinked into existence. One moment the room was empty. The next, she sat cross-legged in the middle of the room in a blue dress. She stared at Nathan with curious eyes, a half-smile on her lips. Chapter 32
I've never met a human who could see through a mystic fox's illusions. Part of me wonders if I should have tested you in your fortress and pretended to be somebody else. Would you have realized it was me? What interesting things might I have learned or experienced?
Narime laughed. You're not a very good actor, so I don't know if that would have worked out, Nathan said. The fox glared at him, her tails weaving patterns in the air. Behind her, the binding stone glowed. It appeared almost identical to the one at Garrick Pass, perfectly round, a meter in diameter, glowing white, and had two thick bands of black stretched across its luminescent surface. Those bands meant that the binding stone was protected by the Federation's protective wards. Nathan knew how to decode them, but he needed time to do so. Time he wouldn't have if Narime decided to turn him into ash. Fay and Seraph began to circle the fox. Narime spared them a glance in response before refocusing her attention on Nathan. Several moments passed in awkward silence.
Why are you here? Nathan asked. Why isn't anybody else here?
Ariette and Tanius agreed to send me here so that Fias can focus his efforts elsewhere,
Narime said. Her tails pulled close around her body.
I already said you're a terrible actor. Why are you really here?
Narime clicked her tongue and looked at Seraph. No reply was given to her look, so Narime turned back to Nathan.
Fine, Narime huffed. Tanius doesn't know I'm here. Ariette certainly didn't want me here, but he relented once he discovered that Fias was still in Tartus. While I may disagree with Ariette's opinion of Tanius, it at least allowed me to be here.
If Nathan remembered correctly,
Ariette was Nadime's current bastion. Nathan had never met him, as he had died before Nadime had sought out Nathan's assistance in his timeline. When Tanius had begun taking control of the Federation, Ariette had died defending the Hakim Desert. Most of the bastions in charge of the defenses had abandoned their posts so that they could stop Tanius, and the next large overland assault by the demons left the Federation on the brink.
Ariette is supporting Tanius? Nathan asked carefully.
Tanius has more allies than you know, Nadime replied.
Nathan gave her a look, and she huffed at him again.
Leaving aside your acting abilities, if Tanius had so many mysterious allies, then he would be protecting this binding stone with more than a single duo-gem champion, Nathan said.
That's right, Seraph added. You're powerful, Nadime, but you can't stop all three of us, and not in close quarters like this.
Really?
Narime's chest puffed out.
I'm a six-tailed mystic fox. My talents in sorcery far exceed anything you can imagine, and my opponents are a monogem beastkin with a year of experience, a duo-gem human whose gem abilities excel at endurance battles and defeating opponents weaker than her, and a bastion without the support of his binding stones.
Nadime stood up and flicked her tails as one.
Unlike you, Seraph, I didn't let him steal the binding stone. Shall I demonstrate the true skill and power of a mystic fox?
If there was ever to be a poor matchup, it was this one. Before Nathan could say anything, Nadime raised a hand surrounded by a pair of glowing squares. Nathan felt the magic of the barrier snapping into place. This barrier glowed pale blue and partially obscured Nadime from his vision. He drew his sword, cursing. Azure flames crashed into the barrier and clung to them. Unlike the barriers outside, this one didn't immediately collapse. The flames ate away at the barrier, but made slow progress. A moment later, the flames vanished in a wisp of smoke. Narime's sapphires glowed, and sweat formed on her brow. She let out a deep breath. A smirk formed on her face.
Care to try something else? Narime asked.
That was new. That was very new. Nathan hid his shock as best he could, and kept his sword raised. With his spare hand, he cast a third-rank spell to enhance his muscles. Before he even finished casting, he felt the spell fizzle out. The triangle in his hand shattered with a piercing wail that caused Nathan to wince. Nadime continued to smirk at him from behind her barrier. Seraph slammed her energy waves into the barrier, but they bounced off with minimal effect. He hadn't seen that coming, but at least he had confirmed that one part of Narime's gem ability was as he remembered.
Nathan, what do I do?
Faye shouted, eyes wide.
Keep the pressure up, he said.
Faye's and Seraph's eyes met, then rushed Narime at the same time. The fox placed her hands together, and a pair of pentagons appeared between them. Her silver tails weaved a pattern behind her, their white tips glowing blindingly bright. Flames washed over the barrier and split apart where Seraph's energy waves met them. Both women struck the barrier with all their might. The barrier began to crack and warp. Faye's flames found purchase and began to eat away at the core of the barrier. Within moments, they would be inside. Nathan pointed his sword at Narime and cast a supercharged fourth-rank spell. His sword glowed a sickly green. She glanced at him and furrowed her brow. Her gems flashed. The flames vanished again, leaving the barrier intact. A moment later, Nathan's spell lit up the room. A brilliant pulse of light magic split the air as it slammed into the barrier. The entire barrier flattened into a disk that was barely larger than Narime. Wind whipped about the room, flipping the bottoms of Faye's uniform and Seraph's Jiangsam. The barrier cracked, then shattered. Narime shut her eyes as the wind magic sliced into her. Dozens of cuts formed along her skin and dress. Blood ran down her cheeks and arms. A few moments later, Nathan's spell ended. Narime was bloodied, but only with scratches. She was a duo gem champion. Her enhancement made her far sturdier than ordinary humans. Which was fortunate, because Nathan wanted to recruit Narime after this, not bury her. The unfortunate part was that it meant the fifth-rank spell in Narime's hands was complete. Her tails finished gathering energy. For humans, casting a spell of this power so fast was impossible, but Narime wasn't human. Narime tilted her head to one side and twisted her wrists. The pentagons between her hands flared. The entire world crashed down on Nathan's shoulders. His vision wavered as every part of his body was struck by an immense pressure. Narime had struck them with ascended magic, manipulation of raw physical force. Fae screamed as she was slammed into the stone floor by an invisible force. Her scimitar skittered away, but the catgirl was more concerned about the pressure trying to combine her ribcage with her breastplate. Seraph remained on one knee and pulsed a wave of energy around herself. For a moment, she broke free.